Welcome to the podcast series for HAP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the recently published article by Bender et al. Titled Differential Vascular Dysfunction in Insulin Resistance. This article published in our April 2011 issue. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief Bill Stanley, lead author Sean Bender, and expert Robert Hester. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Well, obese individuals with insulin resistance have vascular dysfunction, and that's been well described, mainly seen as a specific impaired endothelial-dependent relaxation. And in terms of skeletal muscle, there's a decrease in resting blood flow and impaired functional hyperemia. Now, studies in genetically obese rats have shown that this is most prominent in arteries that feed fast-twitch glycolytic muscles. And in arteries that feed slow-twitch oxidative muscle fibers, they have relatively normal endothelial-dependent relaxation. Now, in the present study here, what they did is they took some of these obese rats that are insulin resistant and had them just do voluntary exercise. And they naturally liked to work out, and they did it for 4 months. And they saw a normalization of body fat, glucose was reduced, and there was a decrease in insulin resistance. And along with this, there was an improvement in endothelial-dependent relaxation in the arteries that feed the fast-twitch muscles, the gastrocnemius muscle in this case. And they didn't see any effect in the slow-twitch soleus muscle because it was relatively normal to begin with. So obviously, obesity is a hot topic in insulin resistance. We have an epidemic. And this is a very important topic and I think an important paper. Sean, do you want to hit on the highlights and the take-home message here?
Sure. Thanks, Bill. I think one of the main take-home messages here is one that's been in the literature for a period of time, and that's that fiber type effects of muscle really dictate vascular phenotype, if you will. And we've seen that in multiple studies, and our study has kind of extended that in showing that hemodynamics locally in the soleus muscle, the slow twitch muscle, may actually create a exercise-like training phenotype of those vessels, and that they don't demonstrate adaptations to exercise training, previous work from our lab, and they seem to be rather protected from the vascular dysfunction that occurs with insulin resistance in these animals. And that contrasts what we saw in the gastrocnemius feed artery, which is, as you mentioned, reductions in endothelium-dependent dilation and increases in constrictor sensitivity, which are classic hallmarks of diabetic dysfunction, that were only reversed when we gave the animals access to running wheels, which we were fortunate with this model that they're spontaneously active and that they're willing to get on the wheel. So I think the take-home message here is that fiber type effects are critical and that we need to be really thinking about those in perhaps exercise prescription for patients with insulin resistance and what exercise regimens are recruiting the greatest number of fiber types.
Good points. Robert, what do you think of the strengths and weaknesses of the study?
I think Sean really hit on it right there about these inherent differences in the vascular responses in the different fiber types. I think that's very important to know, and I think he brings up the point about especially exercise regimens that may be important in terms of improving the vascular responses in the different fiber types. I think it's also, again, very important that he showed that exercise does improve vascular dysfunction in these particular, a different model of obesity as compared to some of the others that have been used in the previous studies. The limitations, I think, and it's inherent in the way this model works, is he's basing his flows on previous studies. And it's a little bit of it's a really challenge to be able to measure flows in these animals during their activity throughout the day. So I think it's a good point that it's probably due to the flow responses in the soleus versus the gastrocnemius, but a little bit more measurements, if possible, would really strengthen that argument.
Sean, what do you think the mechanisms are here? You see a decrease in fat mass. Is there some communication from adipokines, or what do you think is mediating this effect? Is it glucose going down? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And obviously, one of the things that's hardest for any of us that work in this field to tease out. Certainly, there are the reductions in the comorbidities, like you mentioned, that are systemic, and that certainly does contribute, without question. The relative contribution, though, is much harder to tease out, and from a vascular perspective, we certainly think that it's the increases in blood flow and perhaps shear stress on the endothelium that is promoting some of these adaptations, because in the soleus, that muscle is recruited with standing, and so you have chronically higher levels in the soleus muscle throughout the day when the animal's just standing and normally being active in the cage, whereas the gastroc really isn't recruited till you get them on the running wheel and they have these episodic increases in blood flow during activity, which they're rather active for, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day, so they're getting a pretty significant stimulus in that regard.
One other thing that does come up in these types of studies where you have exercise as your stimulus, and that'll in and of itself does a lot to the vasculature and to muscle. And then you have the loss of fat mass. And how do you separate the two? Have you tried that, or do you have plans to do compare, say, food restriction, weight loss to exercise induced weight loss or prevention of weight gain? How do you tease out the two effects of exercise training?
Well, caloric restriction is one way to do that for sure. And we've had some work from other folks in our lab and people we collaborate with here that have done caloric restriction in these animals. They haven't looked at the same vessels and they haven't looked at the same outcomes necessarily. They've looked at insulin-induced dilation in skeletal muscle and the gastroc. And caloric restriction didn't seem to have much of an effect on really preventing the vascular outcomes.
So the best way to lose weight for health anyway is probably to exercise and food restrict rather than just food restrict. I think
with these animals, I'd say it's don't gain weight in the first place, because this really was a prevention study in by design. Yeah. You know, we started them active at 4 weeks of age, and so the running group never really gained weight. That's another kind of future direction is, well, how does this model work as a treatment? We get them insulin resistant and obese and then put them on a treadmill or a running wheel and see how they respond to that.
Sean, you brought up an interesting point having to do with food intake, and you actually have the weights of the animals of the lean sedentary and the obese physically active were actually the same at the end of your experimental protocol. So my question would be whether there might be some effect of exercise to have a centrally mediated decrease in food intake. Do you have any evidence of that?
The run animals that remained lean actually ate more than the sedentary animals. So they certainly were expending more calories than the lean animals were on a daily basis.
You actually saw that the animals sort of decreased their running by the time you got to the end of the exercise period. So was there a lack of training, or I'm a little curious as to sort of why they might have decreased their running?
You know, that's kind distance. That's kind of what we've seen with all of these animals, and I'm not sure what it is. It's entirely a voluntary wheel running. It's, you know, certainly we think it's probably just something centrally mediated in these guys. Maybe the motivation to run goes down as they age, because that's what we see in every group of animals that we've put on a running wheel, is that they peak around 9 or 10 weeks of age and then they kind of trail off. But even as they're trailing off out to 20 weeks of age, they're still running 5 or 6 kilometers a day. So the stimulus is still rather substantial.
That's like most of us. We lose our motivation to run as we get older. Just a question about the nitric oxide role. It looks like there was a complete inhibition of acetylcholine vasodilation in the gastroc after you gave L-name, suggesting that it was the nitric oxide was the major player there. However, in the soleus, it looked like there was still a significant vasodilation with acetylcholine. So could you comment on that?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting observation, Robert. I thought in the past that perhaps that one of the things that may predispose, say, the gastroc feed artery to some of these dysfunction that we've seen, there's a lot of literature that certainly suggests that reductions in NO bioavailability are a very early adaptation, or a negative adaptation to insulin resistance. And so in a vascular bed like the gastroc feed artery, as you mentioned, that seems to be entirely dependent on NO as far as the ACH response is concerned, perhaps we see that dysfunction earlier than we do in a vessel like the soleus feed artery, where ACH response appears to be only partly dependent on NO and then also involves prostacyclin and EDHF-dependent mechanisms. Perhaps that's part of what's protecting the soleus feed artery to some of this dysfunction, is its ability to perhaps compensate for decrements in NO bioavailability.
Well, thanks, Sean. I think this wraps it up. It's a very interesting paper, great clinical relevance, and thank you all for your time. Kara?
And to our readers, thanks for listening to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast series.